So I hope your pursuit of happiness is going well. I spent the whole day today working on a talk. And I was planning to talk about how it's necessary in order to enjoy happiness, really to open to the shadow, to open to our difficulty, to our pain, to deal with our with our denial. And as I spent the day preparing this talk, I got more and more depressed. I was going to read from this cheerful book called Meeting the Shadow. It's actually quite wonderful. But as I was driving here, I was feeling just this intuitive feeling, I shouldn't give this talk tonight. Maybe another time. I think it's a necessary subject, but somehow it doesn't feel appropriate for tonight. So I don't know what I'm going to talk about right now. It's kind of an interesting position to be in. So it may be somewhat more stream of consciousness than usual. It feels to me that one way to describe what happens to us in our practice is that our conventional way of thinking who we are is very limited. We somehow believe ourselves to be this package that's made up of this body and a bunch of emotions and thoughts. And that's all there is. And because of our conventional way of seeing ourselves in quite a small way, I think that we close ourselves off to an immense range of experience. I think we close ourselves off to a great deal of pain through our denial mechanisms. And we close ourselves off, because we close ourselves off to a great deal of pain, to an immense amount of joy and happiness, far more than we ever thought possible. The Buddha said that the reason there are four stages of enlightenment, as is described in the Pali Canon, he said the reason that people go through stages of enlightenment is that they couldn't open to that much suffering all at once. And there are myths all over the world of the goddess whose face is covered with a veil, and if you go up and if you look in the face, you turn to stone. And I have a feeling it's a bit like that, that if we were to open all at once in one big bang, the way the Buddha did, we would probably turn to stone, because we haven't penetrated to the degree of suffering that there is in this universe. So that we close ourselves off to. But we also close ourselves off by our conventional way of thinking who we are to an extraordinary amount of joy. And I think that many of the mystic and visionary writers give us a little bit of a sense about what that feels like. William Blake, a great visionary, said that the angel with his flaming sword, who's standing guard at the Tree of Life, is now ordered to leave it. And when that angel leaves the Tree of Life, guarding it from our enjoying it again, then everything will appear as it is, infinite. And he talked about to see a world in a grain of sand, or heaven in a wildflower, to hold infinity in the palm of your hand, or in eternity in an hour. Are those just words, or is that someone trying to express to us some extraordinary feeling, some extraordinary experience that they've had? I like to think of Walt Whitman as being the Bodhisattva of rapture. It's just extraordinary the degree of shining acceptance in that mind. He says at one point, "You must dazzle. You must accustom yourself to the dazzle of the light and of every moment of your life." So, what is it that keeps us from feeling the dazzle of our life? What is it that obstructs that? Whitman goes on and on with this extraordinary visionary statement. At one point he says that uh, that a mouse is great enough to stagger sextillions of infidels. a mouse is miracle enough. So what is it about that quality of joy? And I think that just to say that it's very important for us to open to what we can experience here. It's very important for us to open up to our experience of this physical body and the experiences of our senses, and to open up to our emotional life and to what thoughts are, to open up to the totality of our experience. This is very important. This is what our practice is. But I think it's also valuable to say that what happens as a result of this practice is an experience of our vastness, that we come to see that we are not limited, that our being is not limited. And that's where the joy comes from. I don't know if you think about those times in your life when you've had an experience of intense happiness. What really was that experience? An experience of feeling very deep love for someone, perhaps for a child of yours or for a lover. Or the experience of a piece of music that touched you very, very deeply. What really was the nature of that experience? It feels to me that what happens in that moment, and maybe you can, next time it happens, just sort of pay attention to what the actual experience is. In that moment of great happiness, we forget ourselves. I think that this deluded sense of self, this hallucination that we have of being a separate little self here, is impermanent like everything else. It's a notion that arises and passes and arises and passes, and most of the thoughts that we have and most of the things that we do confirm and reconfirm that delusion. But I think there are moments in our lives when that delusion for just an instant disappears, and I think that's what our experience of great happiness is. If you can think of, if you've ever had a very intense sexual experience, the sense of self dissolves in that moment. Even an experience of a wonderful food, you know, in that moment, in just the instant of great pleasure in tasting some wonderful taste. In that instant, the sense of self disappears, and there's only the taste and the knowing of it and the enjoyment of it. And then maybe in the very next instant, the delusion of self gets deeply reconfirmed by saying, "I want more." You know? And in that instant, in just that instant, we not only return to a sense of self, but we really solidify it. And that's what desire does to us. Actually, desire has an incredible mechanism of sort of reconfirming our sense of separateness, of our apartness. But actually, I think all experience of happiness, from the most mundane, that is the experiences of the pleasures of the senses, to the happiness that comes from of acting in ethical ways, in ways that are good for us and for others, the experience of cultivating loving kindness or compassion or sympathetic joy or equanimity, the experience of deep concentration states, the experience of very profound stillness of the mind, and the experience of the touching or the tasting of unconditioned reality. All of those experiences of happiness, from the most mundane to the most transcendental, really have to do with an instant, at least, of losing our sense of separateness. That ultimately our pain comes from feeling apart. The deepest pain we know is that sense of isolation that we all feel. It's a delusion. Joy, I think, is something that we can cultivate. It's actually something, it's just another condition of the mind. It happens to be a very good one. But if we take the take the time to stop and really connect to anything. Someone left me this very beautiful flower gift. Thank you, whoever it is. But if it's really possible to see the flower, to see it really, really to connect to it, then happiness comes, that sense of, oh, wow. I remember a few weeks ago at my home in California, I was washing the dishes after breakfast, and I live in an incredibly beautiful place in California, in North Marin, the little town of Tamales. And there's a big, big window behind the kitchen sink. And I was washing the dishes, and I was concerned about an organization that I belonged to that was in crisis. And I was fretting about that, and I was fretting about issues in my life and washing dishes at the sink, and definitely was not present. I wasn't washing the baby Buddha, as Thich Nhat Hanh says. And just absorbed in trouble with the kind of contraction that comes from that. And I just in an instant looked up, and I saw the hills of Marin in springtime with flowers, and there were sheep, and there was a hawk circling, and just there was suddenly this, oh! And to come in an instant out of this sense of tremendous contraction to the sense of, oh, you know, in that moment of, oh, it's very big. You know, it's possible to expand to include the entire universe in your heart. And that's a very joyous feeling of actually feeling one with things. So I think it's the natural consequence of following this path is more and more that hallucination of separation cracks. And we experience something far greater, and that's a deepening and more deepening source of joy for us. It's possible actually to experience very profound joy that has only to do with this conditioned reality. As the sense of equanimity becomes more and more deeply established in the mind, and the mind becomes more and more stable, there's a point at which is not the opening to the unconditioned, but actually just conditions coming into balance. One comes to the place where the mind is no longer reaching out at all, that there's no wanting, and there's no pushing away at all. That movement of the mind has ceased. And in that moment, it's possible to experience perfection. It's possible to experience absolute wholeness with that lack of movement. This is possible for us here in this reality, in this world. So we get lost in our stories and we forget who we are. I remember one of the most important things I ever heard that I simply couldn't understand for years and years. The Dalai Lama came to Harvard to give a week of classes of teachings at Harvard many years ago now. And it was quite early in my practice, and I had not been exposed to any Tibetan philosophy, and it was a very abstruse delivery for the most part. It was just wonderful being in the presence of this beaming, giggling human being. But when he got into the 13 kinds of nothingness, it basically lost me. But at one point he said, all that appears to a Buddha appears as the sport of bliss. And I thought, Auschwitz? How is it possible to look at what we know happens in this world and see only the sport of bliss? And for me that became sort of like a koan. It was something that I carried with me year after year after year. How could that be true? That all that appears to a Buddha appears as the sport of bliss. And it was only many years later I came upon a statement of the Buddha's that really helped to clarify it for me. He said, suffering is not the true nature of the universe. That suffering, our experience of suffering is real, but the causes come from delusion, that basically all of our suffering comes from mistaken identity. That's all it is. You know, ultimately, that's all it is mistaken identity. And so it's not the true nature of the universe. When one sees the true nature of the universe, it's possible then to see somehow that all that appears here is the sport of bliss. It's just quite interesting. And I just throw that out as a thought from a very wise gentleman, the Dalai Lama. How is that possible, given what we know of the world? Just to some indication that there's so much more here than we imagine, because we have constructed a reality which is so small. And as our reality opens, it's true that we experience more and more deeply the suffering of the world. But through that, we experience also just so much more, so much greater happiness. I think that's better than talking about denial. One other thought that comes to mind. George Eliot, in her novel Middlemarch, at one point says that if we could hear the grass grow and the squirrel's heartbeat, we would die of that roar that lies on the other side of silence. She said, but as it is, even the most sensitive of us go around wadded in ignorance. So that just again, that's sort of, that somehow the sense of the immense possibilities that are here that we don't normally know about. And it's very useful to get little bits of news from people like William Blake or George Eliot or Walt Whitman. So we'll deal with denial next week. Yeah. What we've been doing is what I've hope that we've been doing is actually going out and practicing and really observing our lives to see where happiness occurs and where it comes from, how it is, what are the conditions that give rise to it, why is it that it doesn't appear. So if in your researches into this delightful state that basically the path is only about happiness ultimately, I'd like to, if it's okay with you, to divide up as we did on Monday. It seemed to work very well, into groups of four or five, and just share with each other whatever has come up in your investigation, your inquiry into what this is that we're, what this is, and how happiness comes from it. So if that would work, please do.